This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. It's time to talk some Blues hockey. Welcome to the Blues NHL podcast, hosted by former Blues defenseman Jamie Rivers and former Blues enforcer Darren Kimball.
And we got a problem in front of the Hawk bench. Kimball pulling at Roenick. Here's Kimball swinging at Roenick wildly, and the linesman trying to get in between them.
Federico stole it from Reinhart, breaking in to Hunter. Hunter shooting, rebound. Recognizer scores!
Here comes Chevrolet. He'll be thrown out of the game. Curtis Joseph grabs Chevrolet, and the two goalies go at it head to head, and Joseph with three great rights.
Turgeon to Hall, looking for 500. He shoots. He scores! Brett Hall, number 500.
Oh, unbelievable save by Jake Allen. Tarasenko in the clear. He scores!
And now, here's your off-ice official, Jim Cromer.
Let's go Blues indeed. I'm your off-ice official, Jim Cromer. Let me welcome in the real talent of the show, former Blues defenseman Jamie Rivers and former Blues winger Darren Kimball. What's up, guys?
Hey, good to be here. I'm ready to roll, baby.
So we're upon the Christmas season. Last night, I come and I'm a year older now, and I'm almost the same shape as I was when I was 20. I'm close. But I had one hell of a fight with a 9-foot Fraser tree last night, and I'll tell you what, it was tough. I feel like I've been beat up by Twister. That's how damn hurting I am today.
Is that how it goes in Canada? You just go out and wrestle the tree down?
I feels like I did that son of a gun last night, and I couldn't get her in the damn house that easy. We got it in. I woke up this morning, and every goddamn muscle's aching today. So
the problem, Kimby, is you were so damn drunk, you had the saw turned the wrong way. That's why it took you so freaking long. By the time you cut the bastard down, he was frostbitten.
So he goes out and wrestles a tree without a saw. Okay, and then the people behind the scenes, God love them, don't realize what I deal with in here. It makes me feel like the smartest guy in the room sometimes.
Here's the funny part about it. When I get at home, my wife, you know, she grumbles about something all the time every year the tree comes home. So she goes,
is she listening to this show?
She goes, hey, Darren, I think the tree's dead. I said, the hell it's dead. I'm sore today. It's alive and well.
1-0 tree.
Well, you know, between you wrestling trees with no saw and Jamie bringing in his itinerary, I do feel like an intelligent dude here for sure. But I got to tell you, looking at this, it tells me right away that we got to switch it up just a little bit this week. And, you know, we went back and forth on the segment. You know, Jamie's GM chair sounds so official and nice, but the reality of it is the fans love it when Jamie's pissed. And the reality today is that you're pissed.
Yeah, I'm
Jamie,
pissed.
Go.
I've had enough of this crap around the NHL. You know, we get the do-gooders around, and don't get me wrong. I say this all the time. I didn't occupy the job of fighter. That was Darren. Darren came in and helped babysit all of us guys who ran around like fools. And he protected us, but he also stuck up for the guys who are the goal scorers and the guys that the bread and butter is to put the puck in the net. And I'm watching crap go on in the NHL in the last little while, and it started a couple years ago, actually, for me, when Connor McDavid is the first projected overall pick, and he's fighting in the OHL, and he breaks his hand. Right there, you're like, okay, the scouts love it at the time because they're like, wow, he's sticking up for himself. Now, society or hockey world is like, ooh, no fighting, but the scouts are like, wow, this kid's got some jam. But he goes out and breaks his hand fighting when he shouldn't have had to. And now as we go down the list here, we got Connor McDavid, who got hurt last year and then had a run-in with his guy here in Philly not too long ago. And some things were said to Connor that he didn't like, hurt his feelings. Well, I'll tell you what, I said a lot worse things to players in my day. And if I knew somebody got hurt, I would have told him for sure I did it on purpose. I'd have told him I tried to step on your damn fingers while you're laying on the ice. It is what it is. Get over it. Get over it, sorry. Then we have Johnny Gaudreau, who every time he goes down the ice, he gets slashed across the forearms, across the back, across the hands, cross-checked in the face. And Brandon Bolig is down in Sacramento or in wherever the heck they have their team, the Stockton Heat. They've got him down in Stockton, but he can't play in the NHL to protect Johnny Gaudreau. Derek Englund has forgot his role in the world. He's playing, you know, top six defenseman, so he figures, nah, I can't bump into anybody. And then you got Max Domi, who this is not his first fight of the season, which he knocked the crap out of somebody the first one. So people are probably going to try and test him a little bit, obviously because of the last name. But here he goes the other night. He fights a guy who he shouldn't be fighting. That Hathaway's a tough kid. He's a big kid. And he ended up kind of not giving it to Max, but, you know, he cut him open. And Max, in the meantime, breaks his freaking hand fighting a guy when he shouldn't have had to fight him at all. I mean, guys, fuck, throw me a bone here, somebody.
Well, okay, so let me give you the fan perspective and ask the very simple question. Why do they do it? Is it, and I have to say this, is the player, is it that young guy that wants to show everybody that he wants to fight? You know, he probably, the motor's running, he wants to fight. Is that what it is, or is it really because, Darren, guys like you aren't allowed to do their job anymore?
I think, and you guys, this is all they've talked about in hockey for the last couple of years, but... And I'm going to relate to what Jamie said a couple years ago. You have the best player in the game, and I still think he's probably the best player in the game right now, Sidney Crosby. He's getting ran. He's getting concussions. There's nothing there to help the man out. He's on his own. Crosby wants to do a little, sticking back, and that he's got no one standing up for him, and it's a tough animal for the best player to do that. Connor McDavid, for what that guy said, and I agree with Jamie, if you're going to get under a guy's skin, say whatever you want about him. But if Connor McDavid's doing that, back in the day, when if Wayne Gretzky wanted to say do that, Dave Semenko would have answered that call for him, and that would have been done.
Well, Kimby, let's be honest. Connor McDavid wouldn't have even had to been interviewed about it because it would have been taken care of beforehand.
Correct.
Sorry to interrupt.
No, you're fine, and that's exactly what I mean. So it was a mentality in the game, and I quit. I don't like to go back and say this, but there was a mentality. Like, I'll give you an example. Like Kelly Chase, for example. You know, Blues fans know him very well. Chaser would go around, and he would be perfect in this time right now, because you know what Chaser would do? Chaser would find a way to make sure he got involved in the ball game. So when all these top executives that don't want fighting in the game, Kelly would have found a way to get out on the ice, and he would have stuck someone. He would have stuck the good player like Connor McDavid, and he would have brought attention to it. And then that would have sort of maybe helped this ball game, getting these guys back involved that need to be back involved. And before I go to you, Jamie, the one thing I don't understand, and that I'm struggled with this for the last couple of years, you have owners. Here's the problem. You have owners, and I'm not saying St. Louis, because Mr. Stillman, he's out there skating with the Blues and all that, alumni a lot of the time. You got a lot of owners that buy this just for fun habits. They don't understand what's going on in the game. And they're watching their star players. If I was the owner of the Edmonton Oilers, or if I was like Mario and them, they got to be pissed that their guy, their star player, is getting treated like a dog out there, and there's no one to take care of it.
Well, look, this goes, so many things to hit on with this one here. Is you're right, Kelly Chase back in the day, and we played a team that was going to run Hully or anybody else who was the top, Al McInnes, Chris Pronger, to taking pot shots at those guys. Chaser wouldn't say a damn word to their tough guy. But I'll tell you what, if we were playing Dallas, let's say, Mike Modano would skate by, and Chaser would find a way to get himself on the ice, and he'd go over and spear him or slash him and grab him and tell him, hey, Mo, this shit's going to go on all night long unless so-and-so leaves Pronger alone or McInnes. You're the one that's going to be spitting teeth by the end of the night. And then he'd make sure he'd go skate by their bench and tell their whole bench the same damn thing. One more shot on McInnes, and Modano goes down. So what do you got to do? Someone's got to either stop the bullshit or step up and take care of Kelly Chase at that point. Sure. And at that point, now we've taken the attention away from running the superstars. Everybody's trying to kill Chaser or whatever the case is or whoever that player is. So, yeah, it was effective in deflecting it. And now we have guys like last night even, fresh on the brain, Landeskog and Voracek. Everybody, I'm reading, oh, what a great job. Oh, two superstars going at it. Really? You want all of your money that's invested from the team? You think those owners thought, wow, this is great? Bull, I wouldn't be. I'd be sitting there going, holy shit, I hope the insurance is paid, because the contracts that these guys occupy are massive, and now you got them fighting each other. Two broken hands or a concussion later or a cut somewhere else, and there goes 10, 20, 30 games of your season. Just chalk that up to donation to those players, because they're not even having to earn it now.
And not only that, though, that fight there that went on last night, so if you were going to watch Tyson and Holyfield fight, that probably would have been happening about 5 hours earlier with one fan in the crowd. And then they'd be watching that little hugging match, because I could have put Garth Brooks' song on and the old two-step was going on there.
No, I know. Hey, look, I'm not taking anything away from them, because it is difficult to drop the gloves and go at it with somebody where you know you're going to be a punch in the face. It's just, it is what it is. And you're in front of however many people are in the building, however many people are watching, and YouTube now and social media. is a hell of a thing. If you get one on the button and you go down, it's a kick in the nuts.
But last night, though, the guy from Philadelphia, that's what he does, though. He's like a Bobby Clark type player. So he's going to get in your face and cause it. The other guy for the Landeskog, he doesn't do that.
Both the top scorers on their team.
I agree, but I'm just saying, though, the guy's sort of a spitting image of Bobby Clark. You know what I mean? So that fit him better than it was fitting Landeskog. But I agree with you. It shouldn't be happening. It's nonsense is what's going on.
Yeah, I just think that if and here's the deal, and I'll say this very honestly to you, is the tough guys themselves, late 90s, especially in the 2000s, they ruined it for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say why. The reason is the staged fight, or the, hey, we're going to go, and they throw everything off, the big show, the spectacle, out to center ice, where it has nothing to do with the game. That's what ruined it. I remember the day of, you line up at a faceoff, someone's pissed, and when the puck drops, you get the jump on somebody, and that's it. And if you got the upper hand, you got it, and you just beat the crap out of each other, and the message was sent. I think the stage fights and some of the guys who were involved in those targeted only the other team's tough guy. So it's like, I have to fight this guy in order to keep my job, and he's got to fight me so we can prove we're relevant. Whereas if they would have followed the model, like you said, of being a difference in the game, of going to either, I don't want to say even the score, but turn the tides on the intimidation, be a factor in the game, hit somebody so hard they have to fight you. That's the way you keep your job.
I agree. Now, when you go with stage fight, though, and I want to make sure, like when the score is 9-1, you're really as a tough guy, and I did this myself. Did I go try to find trouble? You goddamn right, because when we were going in that locker room, the coach was going to be mad at someone, and you were trying to take a little bit of the heat off you. But when I would used to line up and say a Twister, and I would line up with Twister, Twister would come out and it would be our only shift of the game or whatever, and we would fight. But we were doing it for a reason. We were trying to see who the biggest bull in the yard was that day. But there was people fed off that, though, Ribs, and you fed off that yourself back in the day when everyone knew that when Bob Probert was going into play, we'll say Ty Domi, for example, and when they were having their big rivalries back in the day, a lot of the fans were going there just to watch that damn one fight, you know what I mean? But there was a purpose for it. So when you walked to the when you walked up and you were going to do that fight, whoever won that fight, I'll guarantee you that other bench grew about 4 feet. And so there was it. So that, I don't call that stage fight. I call a stage fight with these guys when they throw their gloves off, the music gets played, they do it takes them 5 minutes to get into the fight.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. That's really what I'm referencing, because you're right. The momentum did change, and you had Twister. I played with some really tough guys who did a great job of changing the momentum of the game and letting guys like me run around out there like I had balls the size of church bells.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So, I mean, you're right. In what you're saying, you're right. And the counter to that is the showmanship that went along with it for a little while here is really, to me, what hurt that position.
What people started doing, and it was what got wrong when the media, here we go again with the media, but the media got involved and they started hyping this event where if they would have just let the guys go and do their job, play the game, and one guy was like Ty. Ty Domi was a tough guy. Ty was tough as hell, but Ty lived on marketing himself.
Absolutely.
And he did a good job of it.
Hit like hell, and he skated like hell.
Yeah, but he was better off when the media was talking about him going to be fighting Big Bob Probert, and then they turned it into this. So they did it themselves, and then they tried to take it away on themselves, you know?
Well, here, final thought on this segment for me is I woke up this morning obviously pissed off about this, wrote you
obviously.
Guys. Obviously.
So yeah, wrote us. I never got it.
Well, yeah,
I'm
pissed. Cromer's blocked me on text messaging. You know,
pissed.
He's tired of me yelling at him. I guess when you write in caps, it means you're yelling. I'm not sure. I just thought he couldn't read. So anyway, to put an end to this here is I think that the teams need players like a Ryan Reeves lately, who's contributing, he's hitting, he's bashing, Brodziak. These guys who are gritty guys who can step up if their teammates need them. The stage fight of the put the music on and, you know, two-step around the ice and look like fools, we do away with that.
Correct.
But if we get guys who can skate, play the game, and still police out there, I think there's a spot in the game, especially when you have this many millions of dollars riding on it. So
I agree.
That's my final say on it, and I'll try to cool down here now.
Well, as we kind of shift over to the Blues breakdown to go over what was a rough road trip, which is also going to happen to play into our Twitter question of the week, I did notice that on your Jamie's GM chair, you had listed the Yakupov versus Roddy. I got to tell you that I'm a little pissed about that. Let me tell you what I'm pissed about. I'm pissed that we as Blues fans are like so upset about this. Is it really, I mean, at the end of the day, is whether Yakupov or Ratty plays going to make a huge difference in this lineup right now?
No, and here's the deal is, quite honestly, and no disrespect to either player, because obviously Yakupov's a first overall, and Ty Ratty has done a lot in his career and got to the point where he's at because he's played well and did all the things he should. But at the end of the day, guys, if they play 4 or 5 minutes a night, it's not a game breaker for me.
Right.
You know, I would rather see a guy called up from the minors who, you know what, maybe he's not ready. But shit, let's get 4 or 5 different guys in throughout the season and rotate them in that slot so they get that NHL feel, so that next year when they put the skates on at training camp, they're not sitting there, you know, huge eyes staring around the locker room like, wow, this is the NHL. They've been there. They've done that. They know the guys. They know the trainers. They know the coaches. They know the systems. All of a sudden now you're developing hockey players. And I'm not sitting here trying to tell Doug Armstrong how to develop or Ken Hitchcock. Those guys get paid big money, and they've been very successful on every level that they've done it. Me sitting back here, I think the Blues are in a tough position because they took a shot on Yakupov. Hey, what the hell? Why not?
Yeah, they didn't pay much.
I feel the same way. Why not? But why not? You know, the guy was a first overall. Let's see if we can get him into being a player. In my opinion, that's been a fail so far. Not because he's a bad player. I just don't think he's like a wild stallion. They just can't break him.
Well, and that, I think that's what the fan sees. The fan sees this guy. He comes out. He's fast, right? He skates around the outside really quick.
Yeah, you just nailed it right there, Chromes. He skates all the way around the outside really quick.
Well, and again, so we see these shifty moves, right? And then every now and again, he blows by a guy, stick handles around a guy. And then you ask the question, if you played at all, are you going to do that and go towards the net? Now, when he came up, he had a real nice couple shifts where he went to the net, and I thought, hey, we might have something here. And again, this is just the layman fan talking here. But then I don't see that anymore. Everything I see is out on the perimeter.
But just understand this, Chrome. So, and Jamie knows this as well. Back even when I was playing, there's always going to be – you've got your four lines and your six defensemen, and then you have your one or two extra player. That guy's there all year long. These guys are there. They're going to go up and down. They send him down to the minors. They let them play down there. Like, for example, Ty Ratty. Ty Ratty, he just can't get across the bubble. He can't play on the fourth line. He's got to play on the third line or the second line, and he can't quite cut that right now. So he'll sit there and be that last extra forward that's sitting there, and it's gone on for years how that sits there. Plus, you got the expansion draft coming up here. So you got to get these guys some views, and you got to see, and like what Jamie was saying, there's 4 or 5 guys they might need to look at because they're going to lose someone in this expansion draft. So you got these guys are going to sit around and play, and you'll always have an extra guy or two. That's what the roster lets you have. And when you go on the road trip, like they called the Hunt kid up. So he wasn't really – he's not coming up there to be a sixth defenseman, but he was coming up there to be your extra valve that sits there to replace someone that gets hurt. So you have those guys. Those are the guys that are dominating in the minors, and they're trying to make their way into the National Hockey League, and they're just not quite getting over the humps. Like for Yakupov, for example, that's a prime example. You know, he couldn't do it in Edmonton. They brought him here. Shot him out of the gate, and then all of a sudden, something's going on there.
But how does that happen, though? How does a guy get drafted that high?
Well, here's how it happens, Chromes, is that draft year, if you look back at the draft year where Yakupov was taken, the only two other players that were where the heck were Galchenyuk, who got drafted to Montreal. He turned out pretty damn good. And he played on the same team as Yakupov and Junior. And then you had Forsberg that got drafted to Nashville. So that's really the only three in the top 15 that are something to talk about. And Galchenyuk and Yakupov played on the same line in Sarnia in the OHL. So you want to talk about men playing amongst boys.
Okay.
This is where it is. And when you're an individual like Yakupov is, and you can skate around, and all these young kids who aren't developed yet can't handle you, you look like the greatest thing that hockey's ever produced. And that's how you end up being number one overall.
So for the fan, is it kind of like baseball sometimes when it comes to hockey? Like for baseball, they get a guy that throws 100 miles an hour, and he may not throw strikes, but they draft him high because they always think we can teach him to throw strikes. Same thing here with Yakupov. There's see all this talent, and they think we can teach him to play in the way we play in the NHL.
So through all the way up through the juniors in that, there's a scouting bureau that comes on. They rank these players through it's a process. So they'll go through it. The Blues have scouts that run around, and they follow these guys. So this guy has a high rating. He gets drafted. And then all of a sudden, now you got to step up. What Jamie says, you got to step up and become a man. You're playing with big guys that have played in the National Hockey League for a long time. And you know what? Yakupov is one of millions. I've seen guys that I played junior with that were drafted in the first round. When you're drafted in the first round, I'll tell you what, you're going to get a shot in the NHL. You're guaranteed that. They're going to give you a shot because they put their first pick. Now we're going to do, you're going to get a longer longevity than the guy that's drafted in the fifth round. It's going to happen. Does that mean that NHL scouts or NHL GMs get it right all the time? Of course they don't. And you'll see guys, I've seen guys play junior hockey that score 60 goals, 70 goals, can't play in the National Hockey League. It's just a fact. That's the way it goes. So I think Yakupov might be going down that road.
Well, here's the thing I compare it to all the time. And to bring everybody in the business world and everything, it's like buying stocks, okay? You see a great stock that hits the market, and you're like, wow, this is a can't miss. Everybody's talking about the stock, right? So what do? You buy a shit ton of this stock because you're like, it's a can't miss stock. It's exactly what the Central Scouting does. All the scouts jump on board and they say, wow, this is a stock that's hot. Let's all buy into this. And that raises the stock of that company or that player until they become the best stock available. So everybody's talking about it, right? Now you got to see what that company does, which is the player. If that player, the company, doesn't perform the way it should, then you got to watch that stock and sell quickly because it's starting to drop. And once that stock starts to drop, everybody's jumping off and everybody's selling because they're seeing this thing plummet. So that's what I compare it to. You buy into a stock, which is a young player, you see where it heads, and then if it doesn't develop or it doesn't continue to make money like a stock would, everybody starts selling and that stock starts plummeting.
Well, and I think from a fan's perspective, that's how they feel a little bit about Ratty. Like a few years ago when we needed a piece and they didn't trade Ratty. You heard rumors, and they are rumors. So
yeah,
you
but
don't
Jim,
know
Ty Ratty is a second-line player. He's a 1-2-line player.
Right.
And he's not playing there in the NHL. And I've seen this 1,000 times. And Robbie Fatorik, who you know, Kimby, was a hell of a coach. He's a little bit out there, right? Everybody's like, wow, he's a little spaced out a little bit. He used to bring players up from the minors and play them on the first line. Why? Because they're goal scorers.
Right.
Why the hell would you play a goal scorer on the fourth line? So, once again, I'm not questioning the motives of the coaching staff here, what they're going to do. But Ty Ratty is a first or second line player with his style of play.
Right.
How the hell is he going to fit in on the third or fourth line? He's not. But, so this is where he ends up in no man's land.
And here's what no man's land will get you, Cromes. And Jamie, you'll be a witness to this too. So Ty Ratty is going to sit here, and he can't play where Jamie's saying. He's trying to get to that spot, and he's having a tough time getting there and staying there. So then he'll go back down to the minors. And then these guys, and I'm not saying this is going to happen to him, but I'm going to tell you what history is showing. These guys go down, and they become career minor leaguers, but they lead the minor leagues, and they make a good living out of doing that. They score their 100 points. They do all that. They do what they could do in junior, but it just can't. When you come to a National Hockey League team, there's so many contracts on the table already there that these players that are coming in, that's why the first rounders get a crack at it, because there's only a couple spots open, realistically, if that, by the salary, what the contracts are doing. So you only get a few spots. So the first rounder is going to get it, where like myself or other guys, they go down to the minors and you play and you prove yourself down there to make it up to the NHL. So these guys are proving it. And then you got to step to the National Hockey League and you got to show it. And a lot of these guys just can't take it to that next step.
Well, you can't forget, too, and this is the one thing that a lot of people forget, is every player that's in the NHL and even half the minor league guys, they were all the best player at some point on their teams, in junior or college or wherever they came from. They were the hot ticket. And so now you put all these best players into a pool and you figure out, I call it the funnel. You throw them all in a funnel, right? And at the end of the day, one of them spits out to be an NHL regular.
Yep.
And that's kind of the way you have to look at it. And so for me, Ty Ratty's a hell of a hockey player. Nail Yakupov, all these guys that you could go around each team and probably pluck two or three guys, throw them in the funnel, and hopefully one of them becomes your NHL mainstay that can play and contribute every day. But it's not like that. It doesn't happen like that.
Well, I remember when Hitchcock sat Fabry, the quote in the paper was, I need him to, he needs to be a top six forward, not a top 12 forward.
But
I got it. I understood what he was saying, that it's not good enough just to be good enough like a Ty Ratty may be. Now, the question is, how does Ratty get his chance? Is it if somebody gets hurt, you need to just put him in and see if he can do it for a few games?
But he was doing it. He's doing it in the minors. That's why he's here, right?
Right.
So now this opportunity is going to come. And I'll tell you what, it's one tough job. When you sit there and you think up in the crowd, now it becomes a mental ball game. So Ty Ratty's sitting here. Or not Ty Ratty. These guys are sitting up here. Oh, yeah, Ty Ratty's sitting up in the crowds, and he's sitting there going, what does it take for me to get in the National Hockey League? How can I stay here? And then all of a sudden, boom, it opens up, and my chance is there. And if it doesn't go, now he's sitting back up in the stands, and he's going, what do I got to do next time? And you don't know what's being told to these guys.
It's like that American Idol moment, right?
Correct.
You get on stage, and you get a chance to sing, one chance at it. If you screw it up, you get put to the back of the line, or you even get thrown out of line, period, dot. And so these guys now, it's a lot of pressure. I've been there. I've been scratched 25 games in a row one time, And then thrown in two games before the playoffs where we have to secure a playoff spot and said, okay, now you're going to be we need you to play top four because we got two injuries.
Yep.
Well, holy shit, I'm telling you what. You talk about nervous and you talk about all these other things, but you got to rise up to the occasion. If you're not ready to go and you're not prepared, not mentally tough, you won't be able to perform. And then back of the line or out of the line.
And realistically, Jamie, that word mentally, when you're dealing with these guys that are sitting there, it's all about mental. There, you know, all these. You walk into a National Hockey League dressing room, most people have the same type of talent. It's dependent on what they bring to the rink. So when they go on the ice and what they do on there, their talent's taking them a little bit farther because they know how to prepare for it, and they're getting a little bit ahead of the other guy. It's all within this between your ears.
Well, and I think part of it is it becomes more of an issue when they struggle a little bit. So that takes us into our Blues breakdown, which obviously we talked a little bit about last week. You know, you're going on the road. You played, did I have that right? Was it three games and four nights, I think, correct? So they take this trip, you know, starts off with a win in New Jersey, and we talked a little bit because that was the first
game. Started off with a loss to the Islanders.
Oh, no, that's right. We had the loss with the Islanders, then we went to New Jersey. That's right.
Correct.
Sorry about that. So, yeah, we went back-to-back Thursday, Friday. That's how we played the 3-4. So we lose in New York. We win in New Jersey, and then we go to Minnesota, which is always a tough place for us. But it brings us to the Twitter question of the week, which flies right into our Blues breakdown, and that's from Morgan Elizabeth at Morg Ruth, MORGRUTH4. Thank you, Morgan. We appreciate it. And that is, why, oh, why are they so bad on the road? So it ties right into our Blues breakdown because we got to talk about it, right, guys?
Yeah. Wow. I'll tell you what. This is a road trip we talked about last week where they didn't want to go into this and shit the bed. I won't call it a complete bust because we got a win on this. But unfortunately, it feels like they got progressively worse as the road trip went on. And that happens sometimes. This is the part of the season where sometimes you're at the bottom of the hill looking up going, wow, there's a lot of games left. And it's easy to get sidetracked. We hit on it last week, holiday season, family's in town, friends are in town, all this stuff. You're watching all these warm and fuzzy TV shows on the road, nothing else to do. It can get to you. Now, in my opinion, these are games that should have been considered like playoff games. They were every one of those games, except maybe the Minnesota game, but the other three, the Islanders, Devils, and Predators, should have been looked at as victories. We should win these hockey games. So worst case scenario, we're looking at 3-1 on the road, and that's a damn good road trip. Now, reverse that, 1-3, the world is hitting the panic button here in St. Louis. So, you know, the woes on the road, let's see here. We used to go on the road, and when we had a real bad outing or a real bad game, it was customary for guys to be like, everybody meet hotel lobby, 20 minutes, we get back. We're all going to go out and drown our sorrows. Now, I'm not saying you got to go out and drink and party and do all this stuff to play well on the road, but there is a certain team unity that comes from sharing a cold one with a teammate. And I think in life in general, it's the same shit. You're at work. You may or may not get along with the guy next to you all the time, but you go and share a cold one or a glass of wine, a bottle of wine, whatever. It's amazing the common ground you can find with the guy beside you. Whether it's blurred vision or not, whatever you want to call it, at some point you get, you know what? You leave the camera. That guy's a pretty good guy, you know? And the next day you want to go harder for that guy because you're like, you know what? I like this guy. He's kind of my kind of guy. So, I don't know, Kimby, that's my vision. I think the team at that point needs to come together, pull together, and find a way somehow to motivate them to play for each other to get through that crap.
And, you know, and I agree with what that happened, Rivs, and I agree with you. That's the old style. You know, we'd come together. I don't know what goes on anymore. I'm not around it. But on this road trip, and we talked last segment about it, we talked about they had to bring their goals against down. And the first three games, they did that. And I think they're down around – I believe they're around two. We can't count the empty netter against Minnesota because we'll give them the two. So they're playing it. So then they hit a real rough spell. They've been scoring lots of goals. Now they don't get to score the goals. So, you know, it's you're finding out now we're trying to stop the goals. Now we're not getting the goals. So you're sort of caught in between. But defense is important. And we say that because you're going to need it down the road. So if you can continue to maintain only giving up a couple goals, that you're in the right direction there. And then they'll find their scoring. So they hit a rough spell. The problem with me on the road trip is, so we're going to go to the last game, to the Nashville game. And I'm sitting there, they're up 3-0. Your best line going right now is the fourth line again. Brodziak and them, they're in there, they're forcing a lot of things, getting things done. playing the way they got to play against Nashville. Then all of a sudden, we get a 3-0 lead, and now we're going to go play shinny with Nashville. And yeah. so now, I tell you what, Jamie, I've played a lot of hockey. I've watched a lot of hockey. These defensemen that are jumping up, there's like a 5-on-2 coming to guys, and sometimes like these guys are jumping up nonstop. We talk about holding the blue line. I don't even think they even tried to hold the blue line there. I don't know how you hold the blue line on a 5-on-2 because you got guys going everywhere.
You can't.
You know. So, but this is all creeping into the game. So now we're going to get into a shootout with Nashville, and I believe that's the only we could stack up with Nashville probably pretty close. But they got one hell of a good team sitting there. If you look at their roster, it's pretty damn good. From defenseman to forward, they're on the offensive side. You got to beat them in their end, and you're going to play a little more physical. And then I think that's how you're going to beat them. The Blues tried to play a little shinny, and I think they got caught up in that game.
Well, here's the deal. With Nashville, with the trade for Weber for Subban, they created a more offensively-minded team, okay? Because Weber scores goals, but his goals are on the power play from the point, slap shot. Subban's going to carry that thing, and so will Roman Josi, and so will Ellis, and a number of those guys that play back there. So, yeah, they're down by 3 goals. Guess what? The mentality of each team is, well, we got nothing to lose now, so let's send the fourth guy in the rush the whole time. Let's have guys cheating up the ice here so that we get a turnover or loose puck. We're gone. We have a chance to get back in this game. We score one, it's a 2-goal lead. We're right in it. We score two, we're damn well right back in this thing. And I think that's what he saw was there's a way to continue with your foot on the gas like the Blues tried to do, and there's a way not to. Okay, and the way not to is to be so committed to continuing with your foot on the gas that you forget about your defensive assignments. And as a team, you want to make sure that in the offensive zone, when you have a lead of 3 goals especially, even 2 goals, even 1 goal, you have an F3, which is a high guy. So now, essentially, any turnover or giveaway or anything at all, you have 3 guys that can defend. Ordinarily, you got 1 guy who's back-checking will find another guy. So you end up with a 4-on-3. Rush up the ice, it's not terrible. Usually you can force a guy into a dump and something happens. Now, when your F3 or your high guy leaks down low and you got 3 forwards now caught below the other team's hash marks, guess what? 1 defenseman jumps past. Now you're 4-on-2. Like you said, any bad luck at all or any craziness, you have a 5-on-2.
Yeah.
What the hell are you going to do there? And the speed that Nashville has, 2-3 steps, they're gone. So now you're chasing the game. And then they get momentum. They're at home. All the things that come into it, bad goal here, bad goal there, bad bounce. Now, all of a sudden, you're looking at a 6-3 loss on the road, and everybody's scratching their head going, what the hell just happened? Well, what happened was you kept your foot on the gas, but in the wrong way. So, for me, the road game, as we talked about many times, is a simplified game. You don't need to be fancy, doesn't need to be pretty. You just need to get the job done, especially at that point where you're staring down 1-2. You have a chance to go 500 on this road trip. You make damn sure you're coming home 500. Yeah. And I think that's where, you know, maybe leadership, maybe fatigue, maybe all these things come into it, but they got to learn to close the door on those.
Like back in the old day when you played and when I played for Brian Sutter, and we, you know, if you get up 3-0, they would sit on the bench. Tommy McVee, who's, you know, I love Tommy McVee, but he would sit back there with that growly old voice and he'd go, get the red line, dump it in. Get the red line, dump it in. So the Blues just go on a thing, and Ryan Reeves scores a goal because they cycle the puck. Puck comes out to the middle. Ryan Reeves takes a shot.
Yeah, but where was Ryan Reeves?
He's a high man.
He was a high guy. Yeah. There you go.
But it's coming off a cycle. Which
I know.
That was the last cycle the Blues did the whole damn game. And so then all of a sudden you score a goal by the way you're supposed to be playing because you're up 2-0. Now you've made it 3-0. So get the puck in deep. Just keep going after it. They're going to make turnovers because they're the team that has to take the chance. And if the Blues would have sat and they would have just maintained their focus and just dumped it in and let these Nashville guys come, and then they would have turned the puck over, they should have been sitting doing 2-on-1, 3-on-2 all night long. Usually is how that game goes.
Well, yeah, exactly. And you know what? Not going to dwell on that game for too much longer because I think it speaks for itself and we've covered it. I do want to tell a quick story, though, that you'll enjoy about guys that get together through a bottle of suds, okay? We're in New York. I played for the Islanders at the time, and quite honestly, probably one of the worst teams in the league. I think our entire salary for the team was less than the Rangers' power play salary was that year. We get absolutely shit-kicked at home by the Pittsburgh Penguins. I think it was 6-7 at the time, and we had to jump on a plane and go to Toronto and play the next night in Toronto, which is tough because hockey hotbed. They had a good team. Not the team they have now, even though they're getting better, but they had a solid team. We get to the hotel, and Butch Goring is our coach. and he looks back, and you know, he kind of looked like Chucky from Child's Play. He looks back all growly-eyed, and he's like, put your bags in your room and get to my room, goddammit. And that's kind of how he sounded, too. So we're like, oh, God, here we go. You know, it's going to be one of those nights where we go over a video until we can't freaking stay awake anymore, or he's going to get us on the bikes, or who the frig knows what happens, right? Go to our rooms, check in, and we're like, ah, everybody's growling and moaning. Head up to Butchie's room. We walk in his room, and he's got these massive beer tubs full. I mean, full of beer, more beer than you could ever imagine. It's like gone to beer heaven, okay? And we walk in, and he goes, well, boys, you're going to win, and you're going to lose in this league. When you lose as a team, and you don't bitch and piss and moan at the guy beside you and tell him he's terrible. You pick up a beer, you share a beer with him, and you go back the next night. We're going to play guilty, but we're going to play good tomorrow night. So, sure as shit. It's about 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, and he makes a rule that nobody can leave until every beer is gone. So, you know, we got Richie Pilon, who did his part of making sure at least 100 of them were gone. But you know what? The funny thing is of the whole story is we went out the next night in Toronto. We won 5-2. Now, whether it had anything to do with the beer, I'm not saying it did the beer. It was the camaraderie and the bringing the guys together and changing the flow at that point. And shit, I'll tell you what, we went to the rink the next day and we were all giggling because we're like, oh my God, I can't believe that happened. Well, it relieved the tension from getting our asses kicked the night before. So, you know what? Mm-hmm. All these old guys, the old school hockey, there's something to be said for that mentality sometimes.
And how often did that happen? And I have been on teams that have done that too, Ribs. We've gone that way, and it's funny how it makes it on the other side. But there have been a couple incidences where then you went to that next game and then you got shit kicked again. And then all of a sudden the next practice, though, you were sweating all that out going up and down the
ice. Yeah, but at least we had a reason then to lose, right? That's a win-win for us. You drink that much, you're supposed to lose.
Yes.
If you win, it's like, wow, team bonding.
Well, you know, as a fan, you sit there and you get frustrated and you try to figure out why they play so good at home and maybe why things are so rough on the road. It seems natural. Like, you always, I think, as a fan, naturally feel like, well, yeah, they should play better at home, but... on that note, let's welcome in another fan like myself that's been very passionate about Blues. I've known this guy for a long time to be a very passionate St. Louis sports fan. He's a huge Cardinal fan. I'm proud to have him on my other show, Two Birds on a Bat, that we do with Benji Molina here at lineupmedia.fm. The one, the only, the legendary Fish. What's up, buddy?
Hey! Thank you, Fish. I feel like putting on the skates and dropping the gloves, like I'm sitting in the locker room with them.
Hey, so I love it. Which of the three are you going to drop the glove with in here, though?
Well, I'm eliminating one right off the bat, and I'm probably eliminating the other. It's probably me and you, Chrome.
All right, well, we've done it a few times on Two Birds on a Bat, so that works, right? But no. Hey, you know, we always welcome in our guests, and some of the first things we have to always ask them is, when did you become a Blues fan?
I'm guessing I was about 10 years old.
Yeah.
And that put me about 1975. I mean, I go back to all kind of old crazy guys. Like, you remember the Babbages and Federcos and them. But I mean, guys you wouldn't even remember, like Ed Kea and people that you wouldn't even remember that today, anyway. And it was kind of, I won't say it's interesting or anything, but everything, like, I grew up playing baseball and stuff, and my dad was a passionate baseball guy. So everything I learned about baseball, whether it was a play, learn about the game, I did with my father. But my father wasn't a hockey fan. So I really can't put a finger on it. But I'll say this. I've probably listened to as many Blues hockey games on the radio as anybody. I didn't always have the money to go, but listen to games on the radio all the time.
So then now we got to ask you, who's your favorite Blues player of all time? You know, obviously, you know, you got to decide. Current. We talk about this on the Cardinals show. You know, do you want to say Musial? Do you want to say Pujols? What do you want to say? Who's your favorite?
Ooh, that puts me in a spot. You're going to think I'm homering this up. He didn't play long enough in St. Louis for me to make him number one, but I'd say Mr. Kimble here was.
Oh, listen, God.
I just puked in my mouth a little bit.
I know this, Jamie, but here's the thing. I don't know where we got off track with this fighting thing, and I won't have to go back there. You fellas discussed that. I don't know if it's society, but how do we get that back? Because you can't talk to any real hockey fans that don't miss that.
Right.
And we don't even understand the protection of the key players and all that necessarily. We missed that. I think it's part of the game, should be part of the game. So one of my favorite players ever was Wendell Clark. Loved him.
Tip the hat to that one.
He was a tough player, tough cookie. But, I guess my favorite would have to probably be Bernie Federco.
Yeah.
I mean, I go back that far. I mean,
see, the reason Fish said that, though, because back 20 years ago, whatever, I live in Granite City. That's where Fish comes from. And We had a bunch of friends that we'd go golfing right. and, you know, play cards and all that stuff. And we Chromes, you're there. And we went through this process. But that's why, and I always get bug fish. They always say that I always used to look like fish because they'd have a hard time with me and fish. And I always look at fish and I go, how the hell does that happen now? Come on.
Well, you're the only guys in town that share a trash can for a helmet with the size of those skulls. I'll tell you that much.
I've heard that before, and I got the good end of that deal. Because I certainly am the cheap version of Darren.
Looking at you both from behind, I can see why that happened. But why anybody would look at you two from behind, I don't know.
Hey, we actually did all right. I like to use the football phraseology and say we outkicked our cover.
Oh, there's no doubt. There's no doubt.
I know Mr. Kimbledon. I know I did myself. So.
They have to be vision impaired. Right. I think that's what it is.
It's funny for Darren to bring that up because I remember, you know, that time in our lives. I mean, obviously it was a long time ago, but it was really interesting because, you know, we loved the Blues.
Absolutely.
We talk about all the time. Like, you know, to your point earlier, we say all the time, I've never been to a Blues game or watched a hockey game where there wasn't a fight and there weren't 18,000 people going crazy. So why are we trying to eliminate it? But that's a whole nother discussion. But, you know, we were all sitting there one day and Darren's wife, now Missy, had called and said, hey, I'm in this relationship with this guy and you guys might know him. He's a Blues player and he likes to play hockey. Or not hockey, he likes to play golf. You think you guys might want to play golf with him? We're like, okay. You know, remember, it was just weird how we met him. It's like, hey, Blues player, drinks beer. Hey, all right, let's do this.
Jimmy, let me add this story. And he wouldn't let me say nothing about it at the time. So I'm playing golf one time with Darren, and it was just me and him. And I think, was it your nephew or going to be your nephew? A younger kid.
Yeah.
I don't remember who it was. But anyway, we're playing, and we get to 17 at Arlington, and Darren aces it. He hits it and he says, "Hey, I think it went the hole."
Is that the windmill hole?
Is this a true story?
No, no, this is a true story.
Holy shit, fish!
I don't like him that much.
Good God!
So, having said it, so he aces it, and you know, if you go in a clubhouse and you say, "Hey, you know, Darren, whoever made a hole in one, they're going to put it in the paper and all that." So, I don't know if he wasn't supposed to be playing hockey at the time or supposed to be playing golf.
Probably a practice.
You know, probably had a bum shoulder and he's out playing golf and not supposed to be. So he says, no, don't do that. Or just because he's pretty humble and don't really like discussing all that.
Yeah, he's real
that's
humble.
That's what I really liked about him.
Yeah.
Unless we ask him, we didn't get a bunch of hockey stories.
That's right.
Now, we privately got to ask him some stories and got to tell stories about the tough guy fight. And I liked that because I liked that part of the game. But he wasn't just throwing that out there. So I don't know what the deal was, but he aced the thing and didn't want me to tell the clubhouse.
Hey, I didn't know you had a hole in one.
I didn't want to pay that, though, Fish. That's
you didn't want to pay the bar bill.
Too tight.
I thought you didn't want to pay to put it in the paper yourself.
Did you get a drink out of that fish or no?
I think we drank a little.
He should give you a couple of drinks after telling you you're his favorite player, and now he got a hole in one. Both of those are lies.
Wait, whoa. I didn't say – I stipulated that, saying I don't know if I could put him number one. Obviously, he didn't play long enough for me to – and I was older. Wait a minute now. And I was older, so I didn't have the same man crush that is a child, as we all did for players, you know. But I just always liked the tough guy thing. I mean, if you had me list my 10, other than Federico, 10 favorite players, they would all be guys like Wendell Clark, and I love that style.
No, I hear you.
You know, I love Kelly Chase. I just like it.
Well, I can tell you, it was a great time when we first met him, and like I said, I've known Fish a long time. We did everything together when we were younger. I always say the sports that didn't mean anything. You know, we'd play ice hockey at midnight and broomball and softball. They all included beer, though. So you see where the relationships are.
Everything goes back to the beer.
One more quick story. I may hold an actual unofficial record at the old barn.
Barn?
Yep.
Old barn story.
I don't think
could this be?
Well, listen here. I don't think it's kind of record that they keep track of, so it is unofficial. But I once snuck in by myself 19 beers.
Well, I'm going to Google that.
19 beers.
Would you have a whole outfit made to draft beer or something?
Me and Joe Schnefke were the part of that, and we did have a designated driver, and that is also part of the true story. But 19 beers, and I'm telling you what. First
would you
off,
give them to Kimball that night?
No. First off, they were Buckhorn beers.
Buckhorn?
It was Buckhorn beer.
No wonder they didn't take it from you.
Secondly,
thought it was Kool-Aid.
By the start of the second period, we're drinking some pretty warm beer. I mean, there's no refrigeration.
Well, you had to get it
ice.
In somewhere, right, Fish?
Well, we got it in, yeah.
And no one else was drinking Buckhorn.
That's why, and there's no way they were going where they had it to search.
Well, I can tell you that I've just got the old Google box out here, and that is an official record. Fish, you do hold the record.
Fish. Thank you. Hey.
Hey, you know why I know it's a record? Because me and Doug Seuss are in second place with 18 beers.
Are you kidding me?
No, and we used to sneak them in, and we always got the cheap seats up by the air conditioning ducts, and we'd take them out of our pockets, and we'd hold them up so they'd get cold when that air would be coming out.
The hand would fall off halfway through the game,
too. We tried to drink them quick enough where they stayed, but, man.
19, that's a good amount.
Hey, I also want to say one more quick thing, and you can get me out of here about the cool thing about hockey, and I grew up listening to it all on the radio. I really did. But it's the one sport that if you took someone, and I have had the opportunity as I got older to take a few people like my wife who'd never been, it is absolutely the one sport when you go and watch in person, especially at the higher level. I mean, you may get that in juniors or whatever, even high school, because I watched a lot of high school hockey. It is the one sport that it TV doesn't do it justice. So it's so much faster and so much more physicality when you really go there than it is watching on TV. So,
Fish, I agree with you. And I tell you what, you're not the first person to say that. And anytime I want to try and convert someone, not from their sport of choice, but to bring hockey into their life, I say, watching it on TV is great. Go to a game. And if you can, try to sit in a lower bowl. I know expensive tickets. I know, I get it. But once you get that feel for how fast these guys are going and how quick the puck moves and the bodies are flying everywhere, people are hooked. It's an adrenaline rush for the fan, which is what people crave when they go to these high-intensity kind of sports.
And not only that, James, not the viewing of the game, but I'll tell you what, when you play a sport, you're more involved in it than watching. Like baseball, I have to play baseball. It's hard to watch for me. I have to play it. But if you take a young kid, maybe 7, 8 years old, and you put a pair of skates on him, and you let him go out there, and I swear to God, the little bugger is probably going to fall 500 times in that 1 hour, but he'll come off and he'll say, "I want to go again," because they just fall in love with this, and they're not given the chance to go play this sport. But once the parents get an understanding for it and they know their kid loves it, it's to watch these young kids develop into little teams, and that it's just something they can carry on for their life. It's just pretty neat.
Well, Fish, we appreciate you being on today. Thanks for the comments. And, again, a legend in our midst. I had no idea that you held the record for that. That's phenomenal.
Atta boy, Fish. Again. Thank you.
Hey, and I absolutely enjoyed being here.
Even though you like Kimball. Thank you.
All right. That was our Blues fan of the week.
There are smart people out there, Jamie. See?
The legendary Fish, and you heard it here, and it has been verified, that is an official record. 19 Buckhorn beers snuck into a Blues game by him and George Snefki. You both look like you drank
like
Buckhorns.
Cold.
Don't act like you didn't.
Hey, at the end of the day, I tell you what, there's some point in history where I drink whatever I get my hands on. So.
Well, and a heck of a segue from sneaking beers into games to the St. Louis Youth Hockey Report brought to you by Synergy Hockey. Jamie, tell us a little bit about Synergy Hockey, then tell us what we got for our Youth Hockey Report this week.
Yeah, Synergy Hockey is a skill development company that come in and do team consulting and individual skill development. We do camps, we do lessons, and as I mentioned before, we do team consulting where we work with AAA, Central States, AA, all the way down to your rec player. And obviously our lessons get to be position specific, all with the focus on improving hockey here in the St. Louis community. So anybody who's interested in attending or even just checking it out and taking a look at the website, synergyhockeyskills.com, and should answer all your questions there. And if you have any other questions, shoot us an email and we'll get back to you as soon as we can.
Great stuff. You've helped so many kids in this town. I mean, obviously right now you're getting a lot of publicity because of some of the names that are going all the way up to the NHL even. But the reality of it is we know that a lot of kids won't. But, you know, it's like any sport. If you want to be the best player you can be, here's your opportunity. Make sure you check them out. What do you got for us this week?
Well, this week, good news. And as Kimby knows this family really well, and I'm sure everybody in St. Louis has heard of at least one of them, is the Dunn family. And they have 6 kids. And they have all 6 of them are hockey players. And the 2 oldest girls play at Ohio State, D1. Their oldest boy, Josh, plays in the USHL for Green Bay. Next daughter in line plays at Shattuck, St. Mary's, up there playing good hockey. And then they have AAA players and Central States players beyond that. So the family's gifted with a bunch of really good hockey players. And just got some news in between our last show and now that Jincy Dunn, who is playing at Ohio State, who was at 16, almost made the U.S. Women's Olympic team 4 years ago or whatever it was. She just got her invite to national camp to participate again in the Olympics or to make the team. And it's kind of a great story because she had some concussion problems after that. And here's an interesting thing about Jincy Dunn is she was so good as a girl hockey player that she had to play U16 AAA boys hockey to continue to raise her level. And unfortunately, the boys at that age are men, some of them. And so she took a few dings where she got hit. You get run over. I mean, you're a girl, you want to play. At that point, you got to play. You got to mix it up. Got to play by the rules. And the rules state that you can body check. And guys didn't hold back on her at all. So she ended up with some concussion problems. And so when we stepped back from there a little bit, it was a little bit of a road back to hockey for her. And myself and Synergy Hockey, we had a nice role in helping her out and train her and work on skills and kind of get her legs back under her to where she was going back to Ohio State this year as a second-year player, but she hadn't yet played a game. So I know that the week leading up to her first time going back, we'd spent, well, 4 days on the ice together. She was nervous, and, of course, I was confident that she would do a great job. She went out there, and I think her first game back in Ohio State, she scores a goal. So, obviously, you know, she's an elite hockey player. It's great to see her back on her feet, and it's great to see her get invited to the national team once again.
You know, I think, obviously, when you think of hockey, and I don't think it's chauvinistic, but you think guys, right, because you have the NHL. The reality of it is you know, you've helped many young ladies become great hockey players, including helping her as well. You get a little dad thing going on there, a little bit different than with the boys?
You know what? Here's the deal, and I'll say this, and I had the opportunity of working with Jessica Dunn as well, her older sister. You know, obviously, Lauren McInnes, Al's daughter. You know, she's another one that we work with. Katie Matheny is another hockey player, girl hockey player we've worked with. So we've had a number of really good girl hockey players that have come through here, and every spring we work with all the girls' AAA teams. And I'll say this about working with the girls is if you tell them something once, they do it immediately. Usually right away, exactly the way you ask them to do it. They pay way more attention to detail than the boys do. The boys are all amped up, ready to go do it at 100 miles an hour, but it might take them 5 or 6 times to get it right. And the girls, they go at it right away and do it right immediately. Now it may not be at 100 miles an hour, and it may not be with the hooting and the hollering and the snot and spit flying everywhere, but they get it done. And so for me, it was a great learning opportunity to coach these girls and these high-level girls. You get a real appreciation for it. And, you know, some of these girls, and I'll just isolate Jinsey Dunn right now because she's who we're talking about. She reminds me of like a Brian Rafalski that played in the NHL. So skilled and so great with the puck. And we had her out playing an alumni game one time against a bunch of college ACHA guys. Their all-star team played against the Blues alumni. And we had Brock Wilson join us, and I asked Jinsey Dunn to play. Well, holy crap, I'll tell you what, she was probably the best defenseman we had in the game, and even the college guys were like, who the hell is the girl playing? You know, it's amazing. Without, like you said, without being chauvinistic, let's take that side out of it. Let's just be impressed with the fact that she's one hell of a hockey player.
Like, I don't know the older kids. I come in the later version here, and there's a girl, the youngest one, Joy. She plays goaltend. She's a goaltender, and she's a defenseman. And back when I was coaching a couple of years ago, she probably could have been one of my top defensemen at a year above now, because Lawson said he was a 2004, she's a 2005, and she's could have been your number one goaltender. So she was playing both positions.
Wow.
And this little girl would just come, and I remember I'd always come and I'd look in there and I'd see, and she'd be in the waiting room wanting to just go play hockey. And she was on the ice every day. And it's a funny thing, because I always see their mom and dad around there, and I'll always ask them the question. I said, whatever the hell you two are doing, can I bottle this up, please? Cause they got like 6 kids moving on in the right direction.
Yeah, they're a fantastic family. And like I said, I've had the opportunity and certainly the privilege of working with every single one of the kids along the way doing hockey skills. And they work hard, they show up, they're ready to go, they're respectful, all the right things you want. So congratulations to Jinsey on getting her selection back to the national team. And hopefully it's the road back for her, and hopefully a road to the Olympics.
Yes.
Well, and that's great stuff. As always, love to hear about the local talent getting opportunities, and you've had a big part of that with Synergy Hockey, and we do thank you for bringing us that segment each week. Another company that we want to welcome into the fold full-time here is a good friend of Jamie's. I know Sean Vincent's a good friend of you. Vincent Mortgage actually contacted you and said they wanted to work with us, so now we're going to welcome them in every week as our first official sponsor besides Synergy
Vincent
Hockey.
Mortgage, the name Vincent you Mortgage, know.
The name you know, the name you trust. Call them now, 314-839-9999, or visit VincentMortgage.com for more info. You can hear from us, and you know, we talk about we're not real sure which one of us is the smartest guy in the room.
But I do know that.
Well, okay.
I do know that.
Well, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick 30 seconds and hear from Vincent Mortgage themselves, and then we're going to come right back.
The holidays are here and everyone can use a little extra cash. Whether you're looking to refinance your current home, purchase a new home, lock in a reverse mortgage, or whatever it is, we have options for almost every situation and can close your loan in as little as 8 days. Vincent Mortgage, the name you know and trust. Call us today at 314-839-9999 or chat live with a loan officer right now at vincentmortgage.com.
12801 Flushing Meadows Drive, St. Louis, Missouri, 63131. NMLS number 225095.
Great stuff from Vincent Mortgage. Really appreciate them coming on. We're going to highlight them each and every week, find a way to incorporate them on the show. And we do know that if you guys out there give them a chance, that's 314-839-9999, or just visit vincentmortgage.com for more info. Make sure you let them know, hey, I heard you guys on the Blues NHL podcast. That'll help them stay involved in the show. Jamie, you did the toy drive stuff with them. How'd that go?
Yeah, it was amazing. You know, we got involved, myself, Cam Jansen, Bernie Federko, Reed Lowe, a number of other guys, and their goal was 5,000 toys, and they raised, they managed to pull in just over 8,300 toys for charity and for kids. So just a fantastic job by Sean Vincent and the crew over there to spread the holiday joy to many, many kids.
Well, thank you to Sean. Thank you to Kelly for getting it set up for us. You guys have been great through the process, and we really do appreciate it. It is that time as we wind down the show to take a look ahead. We're coming back home, right, guys? Got to get some home cooking going here, huh?
Yeah, three-game homestand here. We got the Devils in here on Thursday night. They've got 30 points, so probably the least of our, the lesser of our opponents coming on here. We got the Hawks coming in that are first place, 42 points, and the Oilers that are 35 points right now, but they're a high-flying team and can hurt you pretty much every time you play them. So, yeah, you know, a rematch against the Devils, they'll be ready to go. Hawks, Blues, always a big game, and then the Oilers, that's a wild card right now.
Well, let me ask you a question from a fan's perspective. Obviously, when you come home, you haven't been playing your best hockey. Is playing the Blackhawks kind of like a recipe to get you going again? Or do you look at that and go, oh, my God, we're not playing our best hockey?
You know, that would be a good matchup, though, to bring it to the table again, to get a big rivalry that's coming in here. Because when you go on the road and you're out there for a long time, and then all of a sudden you come back and you're playing a team that's sort of down there, your mentality is, oh, let's just get through this ball game and hopefully we can get a win. We know we're playing a team. We should beat them. Let's go out there. We're going to throw our sticks on the ice, and it's going to get done. That's what they're thinking. Now you got a team that's going to come in, say in the Blackhawks, if they were the dog, now I got to come with everything because they're pretty well one of the teams at the top of the charts here. So we got to beat them. It's a four-point game, usually, we always used to say in those days. Remember, you'd play a rivalry. Yeah. It's a four-point game. So you're
absolutely
either falling back, so you better be ready to go.
Well, you know, like I said, from a fan's point of view, even if they're not playing well, there's nothing like a Hawks game to get them going well. And it's hard to say they're not playing well. I mean, it isn't like they're sitting in the bottom of the standings. Yeah. I think it's just like everything. You know, it's like, what have you done for me lately?
Realistically, on that road trip, and we talked about it, they had one bad game, the Nashville game. Every other game, they're in the ball game.
Yeah, they are.
They're
you're
in
right.
the ball game.
Well, but you know what they say, the three-goal lead. Or no, it's the two-goal lead.
The two-goal lead is the worst goal in hockey. Lead. Or the three-goal. Apparently in that game, any goal lead was the worst one in hockey. So,
yeah. Hey, a couple things I want to touch on right before we go. Number one, I want to give all of our listeners, it's time for your Winter Classic Contest keyword. And that word today is classic. Okay, so you've got one from 2 weeks ago, one from last week, and today's word is classic. Make sure you're writing those down. When we contact you, okay, which you can go to bluesnhlpodcast.com. You'll see Winter Classic Contest. Click on it if you have not registered. And remember, if you have already registered, you can continue to get entries by sharing and doing those things through that page. Make sure you do that. You got to make sure you follow us on Twitter, okay? Got to follow us on Twitter, at STL Blues Podcast. STL Blues Podcast is our Twitter handle. Of course, Facebook, STL Blues Podcast. Follow us. We're going to be starting tomorrow with some of our newest stuff that we're going to allow you opportunities to get more entries. We're going to do a subscription drive for the podcast. You're going to have the opportunity to send us a picture showing that you have subscribed. We're going to let you do that through email or through Twitter, however you want to do it. If you do it on Twitter, we're going to share it for you. Okay? That will start tomorrow. More information coming. I should have the venue where we're going to host our party at in a couple weeks to reveal our winner and invite everybody out. We're going to have a great time, meet the guys, have a beverage. I'm not going to say what kind of beverage, but it's going to be great stuff. Guys, last thing I want to touch on before we go, the play of Brad Hunt. I want to get your guys' opinion before we leave because a lot of people are asking thoughts on Brad Hunt.
Well, you know, Brad Hunt's a guy that right now I believe he's leading the American League for defensemen in points. He got 29 points. In 23 games while he was down there. Comes up, he's a puck-moving defenseman, 5'9", 190, so he's not a physical guy out there. But you know what? He's got that offensive ability and that puck awareness to play the Blues kind of hockey game. And he's had some short stints before with the Oilers, where probably not a puck possession team, probably not a team that was defensive minded, so obviously not a fit there. You get him in the lineup here with the Blues, good supporting cast around him. He's playing with Kevin Shattenkirk, two good puck-moving defensemen. I don't know where we're headed with this guy, but he's got a goal and two assists in three games, and he's plus one, and he's been noticeable, and he's playing confident. So to me, I'm a coach. We talk about developing, prospects, future, all this stuff. For me, I throw him in the deep end, and I let him to continue to swim and see how long it is until he drowns and go from there.
I like the way he's played, Jimmy. My problem with it is we've already got four guys like this up here. But
we may be losing Shattenkirk.
Yeah, you're right. But so that's what the thing is. So he's done well. Right now, what I believe is he's helping the Blues out. He's putting a point up a game. He's doing better for himself right now than he is anything else, because with the expansion draft coming, people are going to be looking for players down the roads if they lose one, or maybe the guys that are in Vegas are looking at him. I don't know. But he's doing better for himself right now if he can keep up with these guys, and I think he's showing that in the last little bit here.
On the expansion draft, too, Vegas might be looking at Carl Gunnarsson,
yep,
or Joel Edmondson.
Correct.
There's guys that are going to have to be left exposed,
correct,
on this thing. And it's good to know that you got a guy like Brad Hunt who may or may not be able to carry the load a little bit and fill the gap for you.
You get to protect three defensemen, so the rest of them are out there. So, yeah, you're correct.
That's right.
You know, and again, I know we're a big stretch, three games, but when I watch him skate, when I watch him move, he reminds me of Steve Duchesne a little bit, the way he moves.
He does.
The way he shoots, the way he's...
Small guy.
Yep.
Mobile guy.
Yep.
To me, it'd be interesting to see how he continues. The first three games under his belt, some of that can be adrenaline. He hasn't played at home yet.
I'll leave you on this note, though, Cromes. Everyone always says, well, he reminds me of this, he reminds me of this. And I always laugh. I said, well, if he reminds you of that, let's see in 20 years if the guy is that guy. Because I had a guy do that. Oh, he reminds me of Holly. And I go, well, when he scores 800 goddamn goals, then tell me he reminds you of Holly.
That is a great one to end it on. So I want to thank Fish for being in here. And it was great to meet a record holder, of course. And thanks to the guys, Darren Kimble and Jamie Rivers. For Blues NHL Podcast, I'm your off-ice official, Jim Cromer. And we will see you guys at the rink.
This podcast was a presentation of LightUpMedia.fm.